Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today. Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome to Unhappy Hour, the show where we bitch about all the things we love to hate every single week. I'm your host, Matt Bellassai. I'm here in my closet recording far, far away from my producer, Barry Finkel. Hi, Barry.
Hey, Matt. How's your quarantine going this week?
So much has happened this week. First of all,
really?
I mean, okay, this was inevitable, but it happened. It finally happened. I was deep in a stretch.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And something happened. I don't know exactly what happened. I just felt like a pull or a pop or something. And I was oh, that was horrible. It's fine. This happened yesterday, and today I felt nothing. So,
okay.
We'll see. But still, so there was that. Then my credit card was used at some place that I have never heard of or been to.
Love that.
So, yeah, which is like, this is like the second time it's happened. I don't know how it keeps happening. If anything, I'm glad that it is happening because it allows me to cancel my card and then have to evaluate everything that I've subscribed to. So it's like a good kind of self audit.
Yeah. I mean, they're really doing you a favor,
I guess. And then today I dropped an iced coffee all over my floor. So,
so much really has happened.
But the point is, at the end of the week, my Grundle is still intact. I'm getting a new credit card and I wiped all of the iced coffee up. So we made it through.
Look at you.
How is your week going?
Well, I'm back in New York City where there's about to be a heat wave and it's super humid and I'm just yelling. I've just been watching YouTube videos of quiet AC units to find out if they exist.
Yeah, my AC unit, I think I've broken it because I have my copy of Little Women because I'm a feminist and that is what I use to to prop up my mechanics. I have it shoved into my air conditioner to try to hold whatever thing is rattling in place.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So thank you to Louisa May Alcott.
Her work is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but you know what? I had an amazing therapy session last week and I'm still riding that high. So I am ready for this episode.
Well, on that note, coming up on today's episode, we'll have Worst Things First, where I chat about the stupidest, most ridiculous, worst news of the week. After that, we are diving deep into going to the dentist, because you know what? Going to the dentist is always the worst, but you know what makes it even more worster? Going during a pandemic, which I had to do. Then we've got writers, podcast hosts, and authors Aminat Tussaud and Anne Friedman on the pod. Aminat Tussaud and Anne co-host the amazing podcast Call Your Girlfriend, and they've got a beautiful new book out called Big Friendship. So we'll get into all of that and more. So let's get into it. Let's do it. Let's lean back in that dentist chair and start the show. All right, worst things first. Let's talk about the worst news of the week. First, the owner of a pizza shop in Greenwood, Delaware, was held up by a robber wielding a machete.
Okay.
Because, sure. So, what do you use when you're up against a man with a machete demanding money? A steaming hot pizza. That's what you use. Just ask the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles how they defend themselves. I don't actually know if they use pizza as weapons or just or they just love pizza. I mean, to me, what that whole series is really about is how they manage to maintain great complexions for teenagers who eat nothing but oil and dairy. I don't understand it.
I mean, like, it's that amphibian skin. It's gorgeous.
It's glistening. It's slick. They definitely...
I'm sorry. It should be reptilian. Turtles are not amphibian.
Sure. I didn't even question it. Are they? No. No, they hatch in eggs.
So...
What? I don't know where turtles are born.
I don't know. I'll take whatever they are taking.
The point is, this man used a pizza as a weapon. So yeah, the owner of a pizza shop called Stargate Pizza was closing down his shop when a man with a machete approached him and demanded money. He said he didn't have any and then threw a pizza at him, causing the machete wielding man to flee. That's how it's done. That's how it's done. You want to get rid of an attacker? throw a fucking pizza at them. He's lucky he had that pizza. What if he hadn't? I don't even want to think of it.
I mean, I recently bit into a pizza that was way too hot, but I was just so hungry. And then it did, in fact, like tear off the roof of my mouth. So, I mean, yeah, yeah. It can be a weapon.
That's the thing about pizza. It's deceptive because you think the steam is under control.
Mm-mm.
You know, you could gauge hotness based on how much steam is coming off of it. And when the steam is nice and subtle, you think it's fine. And then you take a bite. And when that top layer comes off, whatever the magma on top, and it you get to the all of the lava beneath,
Mm-mm.
You're done for. Next, police officers. In Florida, only in Florida, we're called to a main street in Fort Lauderdale to capture a 2-year-old kangaroo who'd been roaming the neighborhood. Let him browse for real estate.
Yes.
He's just shopping. He's home shopping. Right. Okay.
He was roaming. It's not like he was destroying.
Yeah. It wasn't a 2-year-old kangaroo wreaking havoc in Fort Lauderdale neighborhood. No.
You gonna arrest every squirrel? Come on.
You should. We'll get to that later. So a police sergeant said that police aren't trained to capture exotic animals. So they had to use a leash that is used to apprehend stray dogs. There's literally video of like 4 police officers wrestling this kangaroo into the back of their like police car. And it's like, hey, why don't you bring in someone who does know how to capture a literal wild animal? Okay. That's like if I was like, oh, hey, there's an elephant in my driveway. Why don't I call one of the referees from Foot Locker? It's not, they're not going to do anything. They don't know what they're doing. Why is there a video of police officers wrestling a kangaroo into the back of a police car? It doesn't make sense. I would imagine Florida has the most robust fish and wildlife department in the whole fucking country. Why are 4 police officers like wrangling a kangaroo?
I don't know, but they should not be.
Also, there shouldn't be a fucking kangaroo in Florida. According to the Sun Sentinel, the newspaper, one of the newspapers in Florida, the kangaroo's name is Jack.
Okay.
And belongs to a 24-year-old guy who said he didn't fully shut the gate after taking out the recycling. Also, naming your kangaroo Jack is like naming your dog Spot. Like, show some goddamn imagination. You should get your kangaroo taken away for that reason alone.
Hard agree. Those are the rules.
Next, in similar aminal news, residents of a neighborhood in Oakland, California are being terrorized by a peacock. One resident wrote on the website Next Door that, quote, for the past 15 weeks or so, he has screamed relentlessly every day. The peacock, not the man. Although I'm assuming the man is also screaming.
Yeah.
He wrote, it's so loud inside my house, it literally feels like he is inside my house. It got so bad that 2 months ago, I had to move out of my street-facing bedroom into my middle bedroom. Okay, you have two bedrooms.
Yeah. Oh, king? Look at your mansion. Look at your castle.
Yeah, I've been sleeping on the floor on a camping air mattress. Okay, multiple beds. I still get woken up at 4, 5, 6 a.m. many mornings. This is just a humble brag. So the city of Oakland has received noise complaints about the peacock and sent an animal control officer to investigate, but no action was taken to relocate the bird. He is believed to be feral and I don't know what that means. Wild, I guess?
Yeah, yeah. Like feral cats, you know? They're just the street cats. He's a street peacock.
Well, of course he is. I guess the alternative is he's someone's pet. But
yeah, which we just got out of a story about a pet kangaroo, so it doesn't seem that wild that it could be a pet peacock. Also, has Jack Donaghy taught you nothing?
Yes, I know. Okay, so he's believed to be a wild peacock. I guess it's rumored by neighbors to be the same peacock that lived at a nearby location for 4 years until the resident who fed him moved on. So they just abandoned this peacock and then he became a wild peacock.
Huh.
This is why you put your peacocks in your will and then leave it to the person that you have named CEO in your place.
It would take care of all of these problems.
It would. And finally, public health officials have announced that a squirrel in Colorado has tested positive for the bubonic plague.
No.
What?
End it all now.
Is it bubonic or bubonic?
Or bubonic.
Like Bubba.
Yeah. Who knows? We'll never know. It's a mystery.
The town of Morrison, Colorado, in Jefferson County, which is just west of Denver, made the announcement.
Thank you for the very specific location.
Said it made the announcement that the squirrel is the first case of the plague in the county this year. I would just like to shout out, in the midst of a coronavirus pandemic, in the midst of revolution against the police state, I would like to shout out the worker who said, you know what? I'm going to do a test on this squirrel. I would like to take some spit from this rodent that I found in the park. I don't know who's out here just testing park squirrels, but you're doing your job, I guess.
If they didn't test it, there wouldn't be bubonic plague. You know what I mean?
We would have 100% less cases of the bubonic plague in America right now if they just didn't test that squirrel. Okay? That's math. That's science.
Yep.
This has been Science with the President. So, yeah, unsurprising that the plague is found in a squirrel, TBH. I mean, are we surprised? Bushy-tailed fucks. How about you keep this to your goddamn self? If you had just stayed in your tree with your acorns, we'd be fine. But you had to go out and get infected. That's it for this week's Worst Things First. Next, we're diving deep into my mouth at the dentist's.
Deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive. Deep dive.
Deep dive.
Deep dive. Deep dive. Deep
dive. So I know as you're listening to this podcast on the toilet or on a walk or blasting through your house over the complaints of your loved ones who hate me, wherever you're listening, you're probably picturing me sitting in my closet fully nude.
No.
And I'm sure that your mental image includes me smiling with an absolutely perfect and stunning set of teeth, okay? And you would be absolutely right. That is the perfect picture. Just me, wet butthole on the ground.
Ugh.
Jewels out, okay? Can you hear my chest hair?
Ugh, I hate this.
And a beautiful glistening set of teeth. And I do. I've beautifully straight teeth. They could be whiter, which is the only thing anybody is allowed to say that about right now. But I have had a toothache for the past few months. And finally, I was like, fuck, I need to go to the dentist. And I was not thrilled to go to the dentist during a pandemic, especially since I haven't felt the touch of another human being for 4 months. And the first bit of contact I got was a stranger shoving their fingers in my mouth.
I mean, usually that sounds like a good time.
I guess, but I was not looking forward to it. Mainly because, okay, I walked in, they took my temperature immediately. I was a smooth 97. Okay, yeah, I got cool blood. Okay, deal with it. And then I had to sign a bunch of forms that were like, you being here right now is the worst idea you've ever had. You should not be here. There is no reason for you to be here. Please sign this form in case you literally die. And I was like, okay, yes. Now, this is the part where I admit, and it brings me absolutely no joy to say this, because I will get judged and I accept your judgment. I had not been to a dentist in about 8 years. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm a piece of shit. I might as well be British. Am I right?
You're right. You're not wrong. I saw a dentist for the first time in 6 years this past year.
Okay.
So, you know, we're in the same boat.
I feel
here.
Better. I said that. I met up with some people in the park this past weekend, and I said that, and the gasps that came from them were... it is unacceptable to have not gone to the dentist for that long, but still.
It's not like we haven't been brushing our teeth.
Sure.
I didn't go 8 years without flossing.
Right. And last time I went to the dentist was like, honestly, you're like, for someone who only comes here once a decade, like, you have pretty good teeth. So I felt vindicated. That was 8 years ago. I guess dental technology has advanced in the past 8 years. I moved to New York 8 years ago. So I like never actually found a dentist in New York. And then I didn't have dental insurance. So I was like, fuck this. Anyway, those are my excuses. I'm literally just defending myself against nobody. I'm just preempting your judgment. The point is, I went to the dentist. I got traumatized. I still have my wisdom teeth. I still need to go get my cavities filled. But this is why the dentist is the fucking worst. First, every dentist is really just a nagging asshole who likes to shame you into complying with them. Being a dentist is like 5% scraping your tooth with a metal stick and 95% making you feel like a terrible person. That is what the dentist is. This man literally held up my dentist appointment. It started off so well. He was like, honestly, I'm like super impressed with what your teeth look like, given the fact that you haven't been here in 8 years. And then the more we went on and the more cavities he found... the more he was like, okay, I mean, this is going to take some work. But he was like, when it came time to clean my teeth, and he held up a thing of floss and said, have you seen this before?
Oh my God. So petty.
And I was like, okay, literally roast me. Roast Master General over here. They're also shoving those weird tiny tampons up at your mouth folds, and then they just forget about them. And then 2 days later, I'm eating dinner and I have to pull what looks like an alien carcass out of my jaw while I'm eating my shrimp fried rice. It's probably because I bleed so profusely that they have to shove those things in there.
Yeah, and they also have that weird taste. Why can't they make them flavored? That would probably make it worse.
Well, the problem with any like mint flavored thing at the dentist's office is that it tastes like it fell into like a giant industrial vat of radioactive mint. It's like not, they've so far like turned up the dial on the mint that it tastes like Mr. Mint is literally blowing his fat load in the back of your throat.
It's the way I like it.
Also, why does every dentist utensil look like it was used to punish a medieval peasant who stole a cow? You're supposed to clean my teeth, not spear me in the mouth skin with your fucking tiny javelin. I also hate when they're like, you're bleeding because you don't floss. And I'm like, no, I'm bleeding because you're stabbing me with a knife.
I use water floss regularly, and then I do, and then I floss like every once in a while with actual floss, and I still bleed every time. Like, it's, you just bleed.
Yeah. Gums are sensitive. They're sensitive little pieces of shit. Yeah. I definitely have been very militaristically flossing ever since. I am too afraid of a water flosser. I think I have one in my cabinet, and I'm just like, the second I try to use that thing, there's going to be water everywhere. Maybe I should try it.
It's great.
Next. Dentists are always asking you questions right before they put their entire fist in your mouth. Yeah, hey, here's the general rule of thumb, just that's applicable to multiple life scenarios. If any part of your body is in my mouth, we shouldn't be having a conversation. Don't ask me how my week was and then put your knuckles in my throat. Next, the main thing that I think about while I'm sitting there is I really, really have to swallow.
It's all you want to do.
It's all I want to do, and I can't do it, and I never know when I'm able to. And then finally I'm like, fuck, I have to try to swallow with my mouth open. And it's like sneezing with your eyes open. It's humanly impossible. It's so hard. And then sometimes your mouth like involuntarily produces like a kind of like lizard poison dart situation and shoots out like a globule. It's never good. It's never good. And then they tell you to spit, and it's like, okay, I'm not a quitter. We swallow in this family.
Also, isn't the whole point of the suction thing that you don't have to spit? Also, what are you supposed to do with your tongue the whole time?
Yeah. I think I've had dentists before who have, like, they use some tool to, like, tamp down my tongue because it gets in the way.
No. I don't like that. Wow, you must have a huge tongue.
I have a thick ass tongue. I have a thick, juicy, beefy tongue. Or they tell you like, hey, can you move your tongue over here? And it's like, I don't know if you've ever thought about moving your tongue, but it is impossible.
Also, like, stage left, stage right, or is it like my left? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, I guess I'll just swallow it. How about that? Next, there's always pictures. They're just like the artwork in the dentist's office. It's either like pictures of mouths, like actual human mouths. My orthodontist used to have like Polaroids of everyone's mouths, which now there's like, that's serial killer behavior. Like, the only, if this were in any other office, you would be arrested. But they also have like posters of cartoon teeth, like individual teeth just smiling.
Mm-hmm.
What are you happy about? Okay. You're a tooth with no human body.
And with no other teeth. Teeth are pack animals. They need to be together.
Yeah. You're lost. You're abandoned. You're not at home because you're not in a mouth. You're dead because you have no life force. So tell me that. Tell me how you're alive. You bitch. I don't get it. And especially when the teeth themselves have teeth.
No. That's fucked up.
Absolutely not. I just, like, let's face it, dentist, you're no tooth fairy, okay? You want to be the tooth fairy so bad, but you're just a middle-aged man who pretends to be a doctor.
Oh, you gonna send this to your dentist?
Yeah. And finally, they always hand you that little condescending bag of goodies at the end.
This is not a children's birthday party.
Yeah, I don't need your consolation
prize.
I'm
paying so much money because dental insurance isn't a thing. Like, you can give me more also.
Yeah, you can give me, first of all, a full toothbrush instead of this like little miniature Happy Meal toy sized toothbrush. Or like a full tube of toothpaste instead of this little travel size bitch. No, I don't know anybody who actually uses a full spool of floss.
It takes at least 15 years.
I had those floss like individual pick things mm-hmm. that are probably horrible for the environment.
Absolutely. Those are never disintegrating.
I mean, talk about the turtles. They're probably, they probably have my floss picks coming out of every nostril. But you know what? Their teeth are good. So think about that. Anyway, the point is, my dentist can eat my asshole, and I'll work on my cavity situation. I'll work on my wisdom tooth situation, but I just don't want any of this to tar the picture that you have of me and my glistening perfect teeth. Okay? Just know that on the outside, they're fine. On the inside, they're hurting. And isn't that the story of our lives? And that's it for this week's Deep Dive. And now let's get into an interview with our guest complainers, Aminatou Sow and Anne Friedman. My guest complainers today are writers, podcast hosts, and authors Anne Friedman and Aminatou Sow. They host the hit podcast Call Your Girlfriend about being long-distance besties, and now they've written a book called Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. I have your book right here.
Oh my gosh. What an honor to be a guest complainer. I've been dying to complain all day. This is perfect.
It is cathartic, and we haven't even begun yet.
It truly is, I think, the perfect time to lean into complaining.
Yeah.
So we like to start by asking everybody, what is one thing you hate that everybody else loves?
Well, do you want us to answer as individuals or jointly? Because this is like the very funny thing about having written a book together is that frequently we have, we agree about a lot of things anyway, but frequently there is sort of like, okay, like this is going to be our answer for this thing together now.
I'm curious about all of the above, what each of your answers would be, and then together. Yeah.
I'm also curious. Hit me, Anne Friedman.
I mean, the thing that I am like honestly like ranting about most often, like when I think about pure self-rant hours, is the continued failure of my like Apple Face ID to unlock my phone. Even pre-COVID, I have done everything in my power as a person who sometimes wears glasses and sometimes doesn't, as a person whose hair has changed multiple times since this like air quote feature has been introduced. I really have like reset it maybe like 50 times and it will just not recognize me ever. And now we are in this period of time where we are perpetually masked. Mm-hmm. And I just every single time I have to like make it fail three times and then enter a passcode when I am already like right. breathing heavily onto myself in like an anxious mode in a store is like it really is not fun. And I will also say that I have presented this rant to other people who are like, what do you mean? It works great for me. Like that is a thing that I have been hit with repeatedly. And I don't know what is
like
up with their
fault.
Faces. But
it's you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, my face.
Maybe it's because you're too woke, Anne, because black people know that technology does not work for us. So if you're black, Face ID does not work. You also like can't flush those automatic toilets because they just, you know, or you can't wash your hands in a bathroom because the tech people don't let the lasers like see yes. melanin. No, this is like a real problem.
I mean, I knew about face recognition. I had no idea about the hand and butt recognition.
Cut to me in Japan dancing around toilets all day trying to just flush, you know, like not understanding what's going on. I can never wash my hands. But Anne, maybe it's because you're too woke. That's why the Face ID won't recognize you. You should take that as a surefire sign that in the race wars, you are maybe not losing.
Facial solidarity, is that what you're saying?
It is. It is a form of solidarity. I have sort of like abandoned that mode of privacy for the past 4 months. I'm just like, you know what? Barely seeing other people to begin with. Like, where am I going to lose it? Like, nobody's looking at it but me. So I've turned off all of the passwords, all of the Face IDs. And it's going to be hard to go back because it's so easy. I don't have to worry about any of the waiting for it to recognize me.
God bless.
Wow. Privacy advocate Aminatou Sow is going to light into you right now.
Please, tell me I'm wrong, please. I need it.
Listen, we are in a once-in-a-lifetime global pandemic. Whatever it takes to make you feel safe right now, even though privacy is important and good, mm-hmm. whatever it takes to make you feel held and supported in your own home, I think you should just go for it. I I like do not care. You're talking to someone that has like generally very good tech hygiene, but things that I share with my family, like we are newly a family that has a Netflix account. The password is literally like the things that you're not supposed to do, because it has to be a password that my dad will remember, you know?
Right, right. My mom has recently gotten into Schitt's Creek on Netflix.
Iconic.
And she's all caught up and is very frustrated that she can't watch the latest season because it's not on Netflix. You have to buy it on iTunes or just wait for it to come to Netflix. And I bought it on iTunes. I'm almost worried about giving the rest of my family my Apple ID password, because I'm like, what else can they see if they have my Apple ID password?
I would never.
So that is, I'm. It's a brave act to share.
Well,
that.
Let me tell you the thing that's actually going on is that I am on, like, I have forever been on my best friend from college, Brittany Callender's, her Netflix family account. Like, I've had a login on there. I think my username is Honey Boo Boo. Like, it's been forever. But when my family and I were deciding to start a Netflix account, I just opened a whole, I was like, here's a new Netflix account just for the family. And I'm going to tell you, one of the worst things I've ever done in my life is go through my dad's Netflix viewing to see what he was watching. Yeah. Because every time I talk to him, he's like, oh, I was watching this documentary about World War II. Or I was, why does my dad have a fake British accent? Or I, you know, like, he's always watching like important things. Uh-huh. Even though he did confess to watching the Whitney Houston documentary, which for my dad is like, you know, like he would not consider that to be high art. And then y'all, I went on his Netflix account. I can't tell if he started and finished it, but that man is definitely watching the Tyler Perry catalog of films. I was like, first strike, Papa So, first strike. And also, there were like a lot of Vanessa Hudgens movies. And so, you know, I'm like, is this my dad? Or is he now sharing the Netflix with someone? And the whole thing has been fascinating, but I can't talk to him about it because, you know, I snooped.
But that is a range. If it is him, that is a very impressive range.
You know, my dad is a man who contains multitudes and can truly talk about anything. So it would not surprise me if he were like, have you ever heard of this amazing actress, Vanessa Hudgens? Oh my God, my family will never speak to me after this. There we go.
But Anne, you were saying you think you might have one that you would both think.
We have several. So the thing about writing a whole book together and like at this moment in time, actually doing pretty much 100% of our working lives are in unison.
Yeah.
You have to have a lot of conversations about, are we both okay with this? Are we both annoyed by this email or this request that we got? How do we want to jointly approach a problem? And so I think that we now have, when it comes to, you know, friendship, which is the subject matter of our book, but then also like lots of things that have to do with ways of working together, we are naturally annoyed by the same things. Mm-hmm. Like,
absolutely.
We just have kind of found like a middle ground where if one of us started off being maybe like, oh, no big deal, the other one just being so annoyed has pulled us along. And so, you know, among those things, one of them that we realized in this process is that we both hate a dust jacket on a book. Mm-hmm. Like,
hate,
immediately
hate.
Hate it. Especially a thick book. Like, I mean, but really all books. Like, if I'm actually reading that book, the dust jacket is somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like, it is gone. Like, it's sliding around. It's probably giving me paper cuts. It's, like, trapping food or sand or whatever I'm reading, like, near, between it. It's just, like, why is this still the norm?
Right. Like, if you're actually reading a book, you are not using a dust jacket. Like, everyone knows right. That. Also, the name drives me up the wall. It's just like, a dust jacket? What? You know, like, don't worry. Like, the dust is going to get on the book no matter what. And you should be wiping down your books once a year. But that's just a me thing. But anyway, yeah.
How is it going to get that good book smell if you're wiping it down once a year? That old book smell.
Listen, your bookshelves are, like, trapping so much dust. I have a whole system for this. But anyway, and part of the dust jacket driving me nuts also is that in, you know, like, book world, there is this, like, feeling that because the dust jacket is more important, like the hardcover book with the dust jacket is more important, that it's more serious somehow. So they charge mm-hmm. more money for it. Real readers read paperbacks, okay? Like I have hella paperbacks all the time in my bag. You just can't be walking around here with these ginormous books that you can't do anything with. No, thank you.
Right, right. No, that was my first thought when I, by the way, thank you so much. You both sent me a copy of your book. But yeah, my first thought was how much I loved how there was no jacket on it, but it was still a hardcover. And I mean, the cover is just beautiful anyway, so congrats. But yeah, the jacket is, nobody wants it. It's not there for any good reason.
But I don't think we had ever talked about that until we had to jointly make a decision about our cover. It was just something we like individually did. And that's why I bring it up, as like we kind of came to it through the process, even though we could have spent years of our friendship complaining about this. Truly.
Yeah. This whole time you've been living with this inside of you and you had no idea that you had this in common.
Well, here's the thing about having a friend that you work with, or just like a friend that you were super comfortable with in general, is that... you don't have to keep any of that stuff in. It's so fun to complain together. And then, especially when you're complaining in service of something that you want to do together. My favorite parts of this process, honestly, were when someone would send us an email for something annoying, or, you know, or like the weaselly kind of emails that are like, would you consider doing it? It's just like, just come out and say it. And looking at Anne, or just knowing that she had the same reaction as me, is, you know, it's like, great. I am not alone in how like annoyed I am right now. Just let's get it out, over and out. It's perfect.
Right.
You know, the phrase that like I really associate like a thrill of visceral pleasure with getting a text message from you that says, can I just be petty for a second? I'm like, oh, yes. Yes, you may. Like
that's when you know it's going
to
be good.
Well, and it's also probably at this point likely to be something that I am also feeling irked about, but like have not had the opportunity to express to whoever we are working with in whatever thing. And so that plus like just in general, the text message back channel that happens, you know, all that is the undercurrent throughout all of this work that we are doing together, is a source of so much relief. I mean, I know you provide this relief to the masses on your show, Matt, but like on a micro level, like within a friendship, the text message pettiness release is so real.
So for people who have truly no idea what your podcast is, the small few who might not, tell us about like the origins of you two as friends, and then how the kind of the podcast got started.
We had been friends.
Big question.
We had been friends for, I think, 5 years before a third party, our biz third, Gina Delvac, who is our producer, suggested to us that maybe we would make good podcast hosts. And Gina's background is in radio, and the show grew out of a thing that we have done, maybe not since day one, but definitely since we have been long distance friends, which is the bulk of our friendship, wherein we half jokingly, half seriously set an agenda for our catch up calls. But then even from very early days, we have also had guests who in the beginning were mostly our personal friends and have since become, you know, all kinds of people whose work we are interested in or whose perspective we want on the show. And I don't know. It's
just, you know, like Hillary Clinton.
Like Hillary Rodham
Clinton.
Who
gave a blurb for your book.
Yeah, an obscure senator from New York.
She's going places.
She might have a career ahead of her. I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, so like now it is I would say broadly a chat show, but also we try to have difficult conversations, or maybe a better word is we try to have nuanced conversations and complex conversations about things that we see happening or see covered in ways that might feel a little more fleeting or superficial. And I think that is something that, you know, all these years later I value most about being in this public dialogue with Aminatou, is like being able to kind of delve into that nuance, or like listen to her provide context for something that I have seen, you know, sort of written about superficially lots of places.
I feel like it feels more relevant now than ever, talking about working together. I mean, I'm going to project my own kind of work style, in that writing a book is hard. You have to write a whole book. I'm curious to know whether working together made it easier or more difficult.
I think that, one, there was just no way we were going to write a memoir about our friendship not together. You know, like there's no world in which there's the Aminatou So dishes out on her friendship with Anne Friedman book. Like that, you know, like that book does not exist.
Right.
It's called Can I Just Be Petty for a Second?
Can I just be petty for a second? 300 pages. But yeah, so there was no way we were not going to do it together. And I do think that, you know, you're right. It's absolutely hard. We had never done anything like it. But because we've worked together for 5 years, we have a system for figuring out how we can work together on things that are bigger than our podcast. And, you know, so like the writing itself was hard, but everything about it was hard. It's like, you got to sync up your schedules. You got to sync up your brains. Like, there are a million things that I do in my own process that like annoy the shit out of Anne. And she never makes me feel like they annoy her. But when they become a problem for, you know, like us jointly doing things together, she finds a way to address them. And it's, you know, it's not personal. It's about the work. So anyway.
Okay.
Right.
I need to state for the record that I am also extremely annoying and like, you know, put many burdens on Aminatu to like parse what I'm doing or like make a choice when I am dithering or whatever. Like there, it is like a two-way annoyance street when you do a project of this scale.
I don't know. Part of this process for me was really realizing that, it's not complaining and it's not annoying if it's my friend. It's just, or it just is less so. Like part of the annoyance for me is when someone that is not emotionally accountable to me is asking me to do things that I don't want to do. You know, so with friends, you're like, sure. You're like, I'm right. Low-key annoyed, but I can live with that because, you know, a little bit of annoyance is the price to pay to love people. But if I don't love you, like, I don't owe you shit.
I mean, a little bit of annoyance is like the minimum price of entry to loving someone, like bare minimum.
Yeah. It's like, it's humiliating to be a person in the world. You just have to, you're always like, how do I negotiate all of these feelings and their feelings and their schedule and my schedule, whatever. It's like, that's fine. But if you love each other, then you're like, I am willing to do this work and I will go to my therapist and complain to them every week. You know, like, I'm like, that's the price. But if you don't know the person, I'm like, yeah, right. Like what? Like I could be garbage to your face. That's fine.
You know, obviously keeping in touch with one another has always been long distance. But, you know, just for the past kind of 3-4 months of being in quarantine and whatever, like how has life been in general?
Do you have another hour of this podcast? I was like,
this is the thing we rant about that everybody hates.
Yeah.
So, okay. This will like in a very circuitous way will bring me back to my other rant is the rant of like people just think that like friendship just happens, you know, or like because Anne and I are public friends, there is just this idea that, oh yeah, you guys are just good at friendship. I'm like, are you kidding? This is I am exhausted. I am exhausted at how much work it is. It is rewarding work. But it's work. And so, and we get so much mail, you know, like in our podcast inbox or other friends will ask us or just other adults that we meet that are like, oh, the implication is always like, I'm so lonely. No one wants to be my friend. Or somehow like, you know, me and Anne have figured something out that they haven't figured out through like sheer charisma or something that I'm like, I don't even have that. But the reason that that always drives me nuts is that then, you know, the follow up to that person is always like, oh, yeah, like, when was the last time you invited someone? Have you reached out to someone? Have you, you know, like, have you done the work of extending yourself to another human being? And the answer is always no. And I used to just smile and you know, and just like grin before and probably like text Anne like, oh, like people are not inviting people like they don't understand. If you want to be part of a friend group or a social scene, you have to do the inviting. Everyone loves to be invited. No one wants to invite. What a beautiful gap to step into. And like a way that you can engineer your own life as an adult. And so, you know, and we write a little bit about this in the book. Like Anne and I are both like conveners of people. And part of my like inviting people or figuring it out is actually that I'm a control freak and I need boundaries around how I see people. But if you're not buying like an extra ticket to a movie or, you know, like getting a reservation for two people on a random night of the week or just like going through your phone, the humiliating thing of going through the phone and just being like, who's around? Who wants to hang out? Chances are that, you know, probably like you are not gonna have people hanging out with you. You gotta do it.
Right.
And it's hard because, like, I think that there is a bigger social problem in terms of this dynamic where people are not raised to think that, like, hey, you have to be proactive about creating the friendships that you want in your life, right? Like, that's something mm-hmm. we're socialized to do for our careers and our romantic lives to a certain extent, and way, way less so when it comes to friendship. And so it is both true that when we get those emails, we're like, oh, like, the answer is so simple here. Just follow up and just be really specific in terms of how you're inviting mm-hmm. people. But the other truth is that, like, it does feel risky, and it does feel like it kind of takes on an outsized burden because we are not socialized to think about it as something that is just baked into being a healthy adult that we all have to do.
But in the romantic context, right. It is a risk that we reward as a society. You know, like, we tell people, just put yourself out there, and you gather with your friends. You're like, is this text message okay? Can I say this? Can I not? Like, we have all of this vocabulary and intrigue for how you're supposed to find a partner. Like, we should probably have all of those things for your platonic life partners.
Yeah, I think the competing ideas that I always struggle with and that it feels like we're always presented with is that, like, when you meet someone either who's a friend or a romantic partner or whoever, and there is something there, like, you'll either know it and it'll click and it'll just work and it'll be like meant to be, or it won't. And on the other hand, it's like, no, you have to work at everything. And, like, you know, all good relationships take a lot of effort. I feel like, you know, there's this sometimes competing ideas of, like, things should be effortless and that's how you know that they're good, or things should be hard and that's how you know that they're good, or they're good because you work at them. And it often feels like, yeah, like, how do you kind of hold both of those ideas at the same time? I mean, I guess to close out on an unrelated rant, there was one other topic that, Amina, I think you sent in.
So this one for me is individual. Mine is really Hamilton. Like, I'm going to go on the record about Hamilton. And I say this
Let's
as someone, I say this as someone who, like, saw it, like, not on Broadway, like pre-Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And then
no brag.
Like, you know, I'm a lady who goes to the theater. Like, right. I saw it before it, like, blew up. And then I did see it again after it blew up because, you know, personal reasons. But here's what I will say about the hubbub around people just losing their shit about it. I think it's totally fine to like the things that you want. So this is not what I'm saying. Like, for as much as I'm rolling my eyes at musical theater in general, it's my own problem. I just don't like exuberance. It's not the, like, I'm telling you that this is my own personal failing. I just don't like musical theater. I'm giving you all the caveats. I don't like musical theater. I don't like the corniness of just people rapping at you. Like, all of that stuff is not good. But here, my specific Hamilton rant is this. You can like Hamilton if you like musical theater, but don't tell me that it's some sort of, like, woke, very good art, because it's not. I was like, there are literally doesn't pay attention to women, literally has, like, 1.5 references to slavery. Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, it's like, just because it's, like, men of color doing something doesn't mean that it's amazing. And so the uncritical, like, consumption of Hamilton is something that has been really hard for me to stomach. If you like Hamilton and you're just like, I love it, and to be clear, like, that Dear Theodosia song, that shit slaps. And it is on my running mix. I also listen to it. I am talking less about the thing itself. I was like, if you like it, you like it. But the uncritical consumption of it and the trying to pass it off as this, like, very good political art, that is going to drive me up the wall. I was like, it was not good political art. It is not honest political art. It is, frankly, sexist. And also, just, like, we've already had this moment in politics and it did not work out well for us. So, you know, like, like, turn the brain on and let's be critical thinkers about the things that we are passing off as politically important.
Yeah, I do think there's something to be said about the fact that when it first came out, I mean, coming at, like, the end of the Obama administration, it hit different then than it does 5 years later, when it's like the world feels like it's way shittier in a lot of different ways, and that we haven't made a whole lot of progress on a lot of different issues, most importantly of which is race. And it's like, yeah, so I totally get, like, it hits different now, especially. But it sounds like, yeah, you had beef with it all along.
No, but I am just being honest about it. About, no, like, no, I think that you can just, yeah, say, if, like, listen, I watch Housewives. I watch all sorts of things that are on their face, like, bad politics. So I'm not saying that, you know, I'm above the thing. I'm just saying that you have to be honest about why you watch something and what it is achieving in the world. And I'm not trying to pass off, like, Bravo content as, you know, like, some sort of revolutionary stuff. And I would ask, right, that people who watch Hamilton also do not do the same thing. Just say that you like the songs, and that is cool with me. But this is, right, not, it's not, like, important representation that's happening. Say, mm-hmm, that to, like, the Black women in the cast.
Got it.
Oh, my God, I'm about to get canceled. Canceled. I can feel it. If the Hamilton fans come after me, I am taking all of you down with me. Love you.
Well, before we go, where can people find both of you and your work?
You can find us at bigfriendship.com, as well as everything that is related to our book. And you can find our podcast at callyourgirlfriend.com.
Amazing. Thank you both so much. This has been our first three-way Zoom interview. So I think we nailed it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. I have to tell you, I feel just lighter and freer, and it is truly a pleasure listening to you. So thanks for having us.
All right, we're almost there. We're almost at the end of the show. But first, our chasers. Chasers are the good stuff that helps all the bad shit go down easier, starting with do better white people. Barry, what are we highlighting this week?
I want to shout out Shishi Rose. She is someone who is really a phenomenal person to follow on Instagram and also support with your real dollars via her website, which we will put in our show notes. But she's an activist, she's a doula, an educator, and I'm bringing her up because she posts a lot about the racial disparity that exists in pregnancy and birth and postpartum experiences for Black people. And it's stuff that, you know, you might not know much about, and she just spells it out really well for people. And she also links to a lot of GoFundMes that support Black people who are working towards having a career in doula and midwifery work, because that's one of the ways to make that industry better and healthier and safer for Black people, is by having more Black people who are working in the field. She also has a whole highlighted story section about places where you can buy Black. I love her, and I love following her, and I would really recommend that you do too. And she also has a newsletter that you can subscribe to and pay for through her website. So yeah, I wanted to shout out Shishi Rose this week.
Nice. Now let's get into the TV we've been watching this week. What you've been watching?
So we were with Alex's parents for the past like 2 weeks, basically. So we didn't end up watching a lot of TV, except for the last night when Alex and his brother and I watched an episode of Awake. Have you heard of this on Netflix?
No.
I'm not recommending it. It's extremely stupid. But it is a game show. The premise of the game show is that people have stayed awake for 24 hours and then they do challenges and to win $1 million.
$1 million?
Yeah.
Okay.
But like the one that we watched, the first challenge is they stay up all night counting quarters, and like the amount that they count that like sets them up for the whole episode. And it's like whoever got the lowest amount of quarters, they're eliminated first. And then it's like if you counted it and you were very wrong with the actual amount that was there, that's going to affect you later on in the challenges and could eliminate you. And then they do all these like weird, dumb obstacle course type of things and challenges, like drinking a slushie really fast, because I guess when you are sleep deprived, cold temperatures when you're drinking can like give you a worse brain freeze.
This is so dark.
It's absurdly dumb, but it was enjoyable to watch with two people and be like, what the fuck is this? So that's truly the only thing I've watched this week. How about you?
God, I love that this is going to be entertainment for like the next year. It's just going to be like, what can TV studios make with the lowest possible budget, with the fewest number of people?
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been watching. I haven't finished, and it's fine. I also am like, you know what? Watch it if you want. I don't really like care. But Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix. Did you watch any of those?
So we started watching it after watching Awake.
Great.
But then we didn't finish it because Alex was like, let's just watch one of the original episodes. And so then we watched one of the original episodes.
I don't even remember if I watched the original.
I had never seen or heard of Unsolved Mysteries.
It does feel like something my mom would have had on that I would have would have watched. But yeah, if you're completely unaware, Unsolved Mysteries is literally what it sounds like. It's a documentary series. Each episode is about a mystery that guess what never got solved. Most of them are murders or disappearances or like, you know, stuff like that. There is one episode that I watched yesterday about a UFO sighting.
That was the one that we started watching in the Berkshires.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty weird, I will say. What is your non-TV chaser?
So my non-TV chaser this week is that I deleted Twitter and Instagram from my phone. I'm still obviously checking it constantly on my computer, but there was a lot of anti-Semitism happening on the social medias in the past week. And that was kind of just like the final. I was like, this is not helping or healthy for me. So I took a step back and it already has made a very big difference. And I'm sure that I will download them again probably before the next episode. But for right now, it's feeling good to have that boundary and like only check during the day when I'm at my computer. So there's that. And also cottage cheese. Just a shout out some cottage cheese. I go through phases where I just have yogurt for breakfast every morning. And then I'm like, you know what? What if I had yogurt, but like chewier? And I'm like, cottage cheese time. And I just fucking love cottage cheese. And I feel like not a lot of people show a lot of love for cottage cheese. So I just wanted to be here and say that all of you out there who love cottage cheese, I see you. I hear you. I feel you. It's delicious, especially when you mix a little jam in. A little strawberry jam like I did this morning. And then you add granola and fruit. Like, ooh, yum, yum, yum.
Absolutely not. I will not allow this to be published on this podcast. This podcast is firmly anti-cottage cheese. No, I will say, I think I used to have cottage cheese way more often as a kid.
Yeah.
And I have not had it in a while.
It's really fallen out of fashion, but I don't know. There's a part of me that feels like it's going to make a comeback. We're going to get like a bunch of
prediction.
Yeah. Food trend alert. Cottage cheese, like farm to table cottage cheese is going to be happening.
I actually have been eating more bowls of cereal.
Oh my God. Is that your chaser this week?
My diet is improving. I mean, it could be part of it. My point in saying that is that I've been, you know, basically drinking a bowl of milk and not shitting my pants. So maybe my perceived lactose intolerance was all psychological.
Wow. I tried raw milk yogurt the past week because we were in New Hampshire you could do it. And it was so delicious. And then I was in so much pain, so much pain. And I was like, what could this possibly be from? Why am I really just needing to use the bathroom all the time? And I was like, oh, probably the raw milk that I consumed in yogurt form. And then I didn't eat it again and I was fine. So, you know, you learn.
Yeah, sure.
I feel like I hear your respect for me just like falling.
No, I just, it made me think, I was talking to my mom the other day and she was like, yeah, I don't really feel well after dinner. I don't really know why. And I was like, well, what did you have? And she was like, well, a quarter pounder. Started listing all the stuff. And I was like, yeah. So yeah, that is, I have a similar reaction in this case.
Yeah. Anyway, so what's your chaser this week?
I mean, yeah, bowls of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, or my Cascadia Farms Cinnamon Toast Crunch that I've been eating have been bringing me joy. But also, I don't think I ever actually said as my chaser, my slippies, as you called them, that I bought. I don't actually think they're intended as slippers. I think they're intended as like actual footwear that you would wear outside.
That's just ridiculous.
They are Uggs. They were part of Ugg had like a Pride collection. Remember Pride Month? Remember we barely had a Pride Month?
Yeah.
But yeah, I still found a way to support corporate gay America by buying one of their Pride products, which were these ridiculous looking slipper shoes that have like a 3-inch heel and are covered. You immediately, I sent you a picture and said it looks like Big Bird's feet.
I mean, it does.
And now I cannot wear them without seeing that, but they are incredibly comfy and I like walking around in my apartment in my Big Bird slippies.
Yeah, today I realized that at some point when we go back to the office, I'm not going to be able to wear slippers all day, and I'm going to have to go back to wearing actual shoes, and I am so against that.
Yeah.
Why? We need to normalize wearing slippers at work.
I don't see why that's a problem.
Right?
I would keep a pair of slippers at the office.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't wear them like
no.
The subway.
No, definitely not. But keeping a pair there is exactly the vibe I'm going for.
Yeah, that's allowed.
Thank you.
I will allow it. That is it for this week's episode. Thank you for listening to Unhappy Hour. You can head to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts. Hit that subscribe button. Then rate us and review us, but only if it's nice. I don't want to hear your shit. Unhappy Hour is a production of Pineapple Street Studios. It's produced by Barry Finkel, Melissa Slaughter, and me, Matt Bellassai. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman and Max Linsky. Our music is by Hans Yelsu. You can bother Barry at Finkelberry Pie. You can worship me at Matt Bellassai. And you can follow Unhappy Hour Pod on Twitter for all the latest podcast buzz. And you can leave a voicemail on our rant hotline at 601-600-RANT. That's 601-600-7268. And that's it. That's everything. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye. What love got to do with it?